I'd like to welcome everyone to the Impact of Card Check Legislation on the Retail Industry Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Callers are reminded that this Equity Research Conference Call is strictly for invitees only. No person from Bank of America Securities Capital Markets, investment banking, or any member of the media may be on this call. In addition, if this call relates to investor education in connection with a securities offering, representatives of the issuer are also prohibited from dialing into this call. The material discussed on this call is copyrighted material property and cannot be reproduced or rebroadcast without authorized written permission from Bank of America Securities. I will now turn the call over to Mr. David Strasser, who will proceed with any relevant disclosures and then the prepared remarks.
Thank you. I'm going to start with a quick disclosure. Since Bernie Marcus is, affiliated with Home Depot, we have to read this at the beginning. That Home Depot is a Bank of America securities investment banking client. Although Home Depot and the subsidiary is under affiliates, or has been a client of BAS in the past 12 months, and during this period, BAS has performed non-security services for this company, its subsidiaries and or affiliates, and has received compensation for those services. Thank you. Now let me turn it over. The discussion today is about an issue which we sent a lot of information out. We published a report this morning on H.R. 800, otherwise known as card check legislation, which is something, the reason we decided to do this is that talking to retailers, both private and public, it just has become such a bigger issue that where the market does not seem to have as much of an interest or understanding in this as it is among the retailers, and felt it was a very important thing to talk about. And I was in a hotel room, it was sometime over the summer, and where there was an article, an op-ed piece that I read, from the Wall Street Journal by Bernie Marcus talking about this issue in a very passionate way, and hearing that and then talking to other retailers made me realize it was time to do some work, because this must be a very big issue. In essence, and I'm sure Bernie will probably do a better job of describing it, is it changes the way that unions can be certified at a company. There's no longer a need for a silent vote, and instead, once 51% or 50% of people sign on, a union is automatically certified from the way that I see it. We've talked about this in the context of retailers, but I think it goes well beyond retail. I think you can look at the hotel industry, the healthcare industry, and a lot of other different industries, and it will have an impact on that as well. And I'm sure Bernie can talk about that a little bit as well. One of the things we think that will happen initially if this would pass would be that there would be a protracted litigation on the part of companies like a Walmart or so on that would try and delay it for some period of time. But I think what's even interesting, even come talking to companies that are currently unionized, even some of them are a little skeptical and nervous about what would happen here. About what the long-term impact would be to their businesses, companies such as the supermarket industry. The reason that the timing of this call is now is that there is definitely a difference in opinion on this issue between the two presidential candidates. And in our report, we actually put in their own words comments that they've made on this from both John McCain and Barack Obama. Barack Obama, more for this and a part of his campaign, and John McCain against it. Just before I go, I introduce Bernie, I just want to thank Sarang Vora, who did a lot of work on our team on this issue as well, and did a lot of this research as well. And now it gives me great pleasure that we have three people on the call today. One is Bernie Marcus, who probably doesn't need much of an introduction. Most of you know him. Founder, former chairman of Home Depot, and subsequent to leaving Home Depot, just a whole ton of things that he has done through his foundation, the Marcus Foundation, whether it's the Georgia Aquarium, Jewish causes, children, medical research, free enterprise in the community, just a whole ton of things. It seems that subsequent to leaving, he hasn't really slowed down much at all. Additionally, we have Stephen Handler, who is the Marcus Foundation's Director of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship, where in this capacity he directs the foundation's activities in the areas of free enterprise, entrepreneurship, energy security, higher education, and liability reform. He's been with the Marcus Foundation since 2007 after 27 years with Chrysler. And lastly, also on the call, is Richard Berman, the president of Berman, the Berman Company, a D.C.-based public affairs firm specializing in research, communications, and creative advertising. He's also founded several nonprofit organizations known for facts-based research and aggressive communications campaigns. That's what it says on the biography. That's his words, not mine. Anyway, at this point, I'm very happy to turn it over to Bernie to talk about something I know he feels pretty passionate about.
Okay, thank you very much. I hope that I know a lot of you out there. You know, I'm an old broken down retailer, so just accept the fact that I'm a philanthropist today. I really have no ties to any company. I'm not on the board of Home Depot, although I'm a board member emeritus. I haven't been to a board meeting. I'm not privy to any of their information. I'm a total outsider and not an insider. Although I must tell you, I still go to the stores and send plenty of emails to Frank Blake every time I see something, and fortunately he listens to most of the things I say. So, but I really have no inside information on Home Depot except as being a customer. Let me tell you why I'm involved with this. I'm a product of people who came to this country. My parents were Russian immigrants, spoke no English when they got here, and this was the Golden Land. We lived in a tenement in Newark. Now, a lot of you know the story. It was a four-story walk-up tenement with cockroaches and all those kind of things. But to us, it was paradise. And to me, this country has been one of the greatest things that's ever happened in my life. I only thank God that I was born here rather than other places in the world. And being able to achieve what I've achieved in this world could only happen through the free enterprise. It only happened through the free enterprise system. And to me, I look back, and I know I could be living on a 350-foot boat out in the Mediterranean somewhere. But the truth is, through my Jewish heritage, I just believe I have to give back. I mean, God has been good enough to me, and I have to give back. This bill may be one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. It's incredible to me that anybody could have the chutzpah to try to pass this bill in this election year, especially when we have an economy that is a disaster, a total, absolute disaster. Surviving this economy is going to be difficult for anybody. This bill doesn't only affect retailers, it affects every business in the United States. Every single business in the United States. And in essence, let me go further, David, than you talked about it, okay? Let me give you the essence of this thing. The secret ballot is gone, which means that in the past, if you tried to organize, what you would do is you would collect the car checks, then you would go to NLRB, then it would call for an election. At that point, the employer had the right to discuss issues with the employees. By the way, any discussions would have to be in premises, but they would be paid for it. And if they didn't want to appear, they didn't have to appear. Number two, he could never make any promises or he could never make any threats. He was totally muffled with what he could say. All he could talk about is the environment, what a union represent, what might mean for them. He could only talk in facts. The union can make any kind of promises during this period of time, by the way. They could promise to triple their salaries, give them 7 weeks vacation. It didn't make any difference. They're not held to any standard whatsoever. So it was a one-way street to start with. But at the end of the game, the employee had the right to go into a booth and vote by secret ballot. That was the key. He would listen to both sides, and believe me, they would meet him at his home. They would meet him where he eats lunch. They would meet him everywhere, and they would try to basically intimidate him to vote for the union. But he had the secret ballot. And because of the secret ballot today, we have only 7% of the private sector is unionized, which means that most people don't want it. They just don't want it for whatever reason. If people want a union, they should have it, because it means that the employer was stupid enough not to treat them the way he should be treating them. now under the new rule. So in other words, what has happened, you have a 7%, and our economy has grown dramatically. We see companies like Daimler-Benz, Toyota, we see Hyundai, here in Georgia where I'm, Kia is going to open a factory. Why did they come here? They came here because they know that if they treat employees right, if they take care of their benefits, if they take care of all of the issues that people want, that they can have a good workforce and their work rules will not kill them. The work rules, remember what I said, that's the killer, the work rules, okay? So they don't want to end up being like General Motors or Chrysler or Ford. And so they're not, and they're thriving, and they're producing cars. And maybe when people start buying cars again, these factories will be running at full core. Now what is going to happen is that they will collect 50% plus one card. The day they collect that, you are now unionized. From this point on, the employer has no rights. He cannot talk to the employees. He cannot discuss it with the employees, and by the way, the employees have no votes either. From this point on, it's the union and it's the employer. And they go into a negotiation at the end of 120 days if they don't sign a contract. If they do not sign a contract at the end of 120 days, and why would the union want to sign a contract? They're going to ask for the moon. They're going to ask for wages and work rules and all kinds of stuff because they know that at the end of that period, a government arbitrator, not a moderator, an arbitrator will come in and unilaterally set the pay scales, the work rules, everything else that happens. Now, that, in other words, it takes away from the employer any rights whatsoever. He's dead in the water. And to collect 50% cards is not a difficult thing. There's all kinds of intimidation. There are thousands upon thousands and thousands of cases. Now, what do I object to? Number one, I object to the fact that the employer loses all rights. He loses all control over his HR function. He basically is going to take the most important part of his business and give it away to people who don't have a clue about his business. And the third one is the secret ballot. My God, how could anybody even think about doing away with the secret ballot? George McGovern had an article in the Wall Street Journal. He's ashamed. He's ashamed of his organization. He's ashamed of his party for what they're doing. And by the way, he's done commercials on this. He is so upset by this. How could the Democratic Party take away when, in fact, the Democratic Party, we have a letter from George Miller, who is the head of the Labor Committee, a letter that he wrote in 2001 to the Mexican government telling them that they must have secret ballots, that if without secret ballots, it can't be a free and open society. Well, so this is the most hypocritical thing that's ever come down the pike. And what is this going to do for America? Let me tell you, in the long run, for retail companies, it's going to have a dramatic effect. And I agree with you, David. What's going to happen? Walmart's not going to sit down. They're going to lay down. They're going to fight this, you know, all the way through to a Supreme Court, which will be for if there's a Democratic Congress, if there's a Democratic Senate that can stop a filibuster, and a Democratic president. And by the way, Obama not only said this is the first piece of legislation he's going to sign, he promised that this will be the first piece of legislation to sign because he's a co-sponsor on the bill. So this is a lose-lose. And in today's economy, with this country reeling, and will be reeling for the next year or two or three, this will have an impact of telling companies like Toyota, anybody who wants to invest in this country, to stay the hell out. You look at France, and I will promise you that the state of Georgia had more money, more capital invested in it than all of France did in the last year. Why? Because it's a right-to-work state. Oh, by the way, those of you who don't know it, and probably you don't know it, there's now a bill in Congress. This is a bill with a number, with a name on it and a number on it that will take away the ability of right-to-work states to be right-to-work states. I don't even want to tell you about the third one because it'll be too upsetting to you. But this bill will circulate, and this bill, by the way, will pass with this new Congress. And if the Republicans don't have a veto power, if we don't have a Republican president, this bill will be law next year, early next year. This will be the first bill that'll be out there. Now, what effect is it going to have on companies? Well, I would say that anybody who manufactures a product or has a service that can be done outside the country should move it out as quickly as possible. I think that we'll lose Toyota. I think we'll lose Daimler-Benz. These companies will all pull out of this country. It means jobs, and it means that the economic benefits that are coming to us now will be lost in the future. There's no company that's immune to it. Nursing homes, hospitality, what's ever left of manufacturing. I love it. The only ones I love is the fact that they'll probably go after law firms and accounting firms as well. When you think about all these people that work in these firms, your firms, all your firms, by the way, the Merrill Lynch's of the world, you'll all be unionized also. Goodbye to the 12-hour working around the clock. There'll be really strict work rules. Everybody's going to be unionized. This will take 5, 6, 7, 8 years to accomplish. They're going to grab the low-hanging fruit first. And the worst thing of it, and here is the subtle thing. Rick, what is the number for union dues when this happens? How much money will go out? Will come into the union coffers?
Well, right now the private sector unions collect approximately $7 billion a year in dues, with about another $500 million in investment income. And that does not include public sector unions like teachers and the cops and firemen. We estimate that if this passes, they'll pick up another $3 to $5 billion in dues. If they were to double their size to 15%, they'd probably pick up about $5 billion, because they'd be picking up more service workers than manufacturing workers, which tend to have a lower dues base. But keep in mind that all that money is going to drop to the bottom line, because the unions already have their infrastructure in place, and this is going to allow them to use that kind of money to totally hijack the political process.
Now, that's a critical point, because they will affect trade barriers, global warming, you name it. Certainly on taxes, there's no question about it. I mean, Obama says 95% of the people, that's a lot of crap, and you all know it. It's not going to happen. To pay for the programs that they're going to put in, they're going to have to get the money somewhere, and the unions will go after anybody who works for a living and makes a living. There's no question about it. That Joe the plumber, whatever the hell he does for a living, is going to pay for this in the future along with everybody else. Corporate taxes will go up along with everything else. And this is the demise of a civilization. This is how a civilization disappears. I'm sitting here as an elder statesman, and I'm watching this happen, and I don't believe it. Yesterday, I gave a speech to 450 venture capitalists. This is a room. Steve was there with me. I asked how many people knew about this bill. 6 people raised their hand. It's hard to believe. These are guys, they were shocked. They walked out. They were turned white. Nobody believed it. We sat next to a guy, I'm not going to tell you what he is, a major, major company in the United States that didn't have a clue about it. And he's got people representing him in Washington. He's got an HR department. God knows how many millions of dollars they spend a year on these people. Not one of them brought this information to them. They didn't even know about it. I'm finding this over and over again. I've thrown myself into this. I have nothing to gain. Guys, I hope I live a long life. I hate to see what's going to happen to this country. It's going to end up like France. We will end up like France ultimately. And before they throw these guys out 4 years from now, the damage will have been done. And we're going to pay the penalty, and our economy is going to pay the penalty, and America doesn't know about it. This is the greatest stealth bill that has ever come down the pike. Nobody knows about it. Nobody. It's unbelievable. And McCain doesn't bring it up because he's worried about the union labor, the union votes that he's going to lose in Ohio, and the union votes that he's going to lose in Pennsylvania. So it's not become a public issue, but it's an issue that we should be involved with. All of us that are involved with business, that understand business and care about the future growth and well-being of this country, should be involved with this bill.
Do you want to talk about we need to get to the...
Now, let me tell you what the issue is. And this, all of you represent companies, and I think you have to go back to companies. By the way, don't be shocked if you find out that companies don't have a clue about it. And by the way, only talk to the CEOs, because it's In most cases, nobody else knows about it, and nobody really cares about it. No one wants to touch it. It is going to cost money. There are certain, if we don't have, if we, and I say we as Americans, and by the way, it's interesting. Steve and I had a conversation the last 2 weeks about a major Democratic contributor, who called me out of the blue and said, this is going to destroy America. This guy is a multi-billion dollar company, and they have given $1 million to Obama campaign. He wants to know how to stop this thing, how to stop it. The way to stop it is to have enough Republican Senate votes to have a filibuster. That's the only way you're going to be able to stop this. Without this, it's law. It's a done deal. So, and that's why Rick Berman is here. Rick, why don't you talk for a second about this?
Thanks, Bernie. Well, when I was introduced, as having a public relations firm. What you guys might not know is I'm a labor lawyer by background. I used to be the director of labor law for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I was a labor lawyer for Bethlehem Steel, for the Dana Corporation, Pillsbury. And I got involved in this issue half because of our communications ability and half because of the labor law. Everything Bernie has told you is true. The worst part about this is, as he indicated, the HR people in a lot of these companies have never had to deal with unions, and I'm talking about service industries, healthcare, restaurants, hotels. Actually, any job that can't be offshored is the target right now. The offshore experience of auto, et cetera, has taught the unions that the way to get people organized is to organize them in businesses where the job can't go away. And so Teamsters and trucking is another area. Construction is another area. And what we're doing up until now is trying to get people to understand the significance of this. But inside the corporations, obviously it's hard to get to the CEO, and it's not coming bottom up because the HR people in these businesses have largely been concerned with things like recruiting and training and diversity and benefits and compensation, and they don't think labor relations. Long story short, everything that Bernie said about people being blindsided by this is true, and they don't really understand the collateral damage of this kind of money being collected by organized labor and then being dumped back into the political process, not only at the federal level, but at the state level. Ballot initiatives in half of the states are available, and if you put something on the ballot, typically the person, or I should say the institution that prevails, is the one that has the best public relations campaign. And the unions are going to have literally billions of dollars that have been unavailable up until now to affect these elections and these ballot initiatives all the way down to the local level, to the school board level when it comes to education reform. And it is true that the secret ballot disappears. It is true that when unions go to an election, and you will hear, if you look at any of the writing on this, you will hear the union saying they're not taking away the secret ballot. They're only adding another procedure so that they could either have the secret ballot election after they collect the cards, or they could just use the cards effectively as the vote. Under the law, they can call an election after you receive cards from 30% of the targeted employees. But unions never go to an election with only 30% because they understand that's not a very good showing of interest. Typically, the unions will not go to an election until they've got 60 to 70% of the employees signing cards. And that gives them a cushion so that when they go to a vote, even though they know some of those cards are being signed under duress, they figure they may still have enough to win. In those situations where they pick up 60 to 70% of the people signing cards, they still lose about half the elections. Under the procedure that is now going to be available to them, as soon as they get 50% of the cards, or a majority, 50% plus one, those cards become the vote. And so, as you can imagine, they would never call for a secret ballot election that they might lose half of the time when they will win 100% of the time just based on those cards. The biggest concern is everything that Bernie spoke about. It's compensation issues. It is, in fact, benefits. It is job descriptions where the unions typically try to break a job into two or take two jobs and break them into three. so that certain people can't do certain tasks, and that, of course, makes the business less efficient. And in making it less efficient, there are more people paying dues to the union. And in retail, when you do have a lot of people spinning through jobs, maybe one job might have two or three people in it during the year, that's a good thing for the union as well, because there are initiation fees in lots of unions, and of course every new person that comes in pays a new initiation fee. My concern, as is Bernie's, we have two websites out there if some of you want to get more information. One of them is UnionFacts, FACTS.com. The other is EmployeeFreedom.org. We have worked with a lot of companies in trying to get this message out, and I agree with Bernie that if there are not enough Republicans operating as a firewall after this election, it is going to be very difficult to hold the line. The only way after these elections, if we don't have a filibuster-proof Senate, is to make this so hot for some Democrats. Mary Landrieu from Louisiana would be one. There is a possibility, and I will tell you it's a remote possibility, to make this issue so hot in some states that even a Democrat who is up for election in 2010 has to think twice about whether or not they're going to let this thing go by. But I'm not certain that it's doable. This was an issue in 1978 in the Carter administration. The unions fought like hell to get this thing through, and I will tell you that it was the most contentious labor law fight in modern history in 1978, and they came within one vote of getting it through the Senate, and they got blocked, and here we are 30 years later. If you want more information directly, you can go to those websites, or you can give me a call, or you can email me at Berman, B-E-R-M-A-N, at BermanCo.com. The last thing I will tell you is that we have mounted the largest public education effort on this in the target states where there are Senate races that are still in play. The Oregon race, the Minnesota race, the North Carolina race are all still in play. Kentucky is in play. Mississippi is in play. If all of those fell on the Republican side, we would win. If they go the other way, we will lose. And we've already spent close to $20 million with an advertising campaign in those states as well as some others. But it is nothing compared to what the unions are dumping into these elections. Bernie, I'll shut up at that point.
Okay. I think we've kind of said everything we want to say. I think we ought to go to questions.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything I can add here. Excuse me, Regina.
Yes, sir.
If there are any questions out there, I mean, that would be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad at this time. We have a question from John Topkins.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for hosting the call. And Bernie, you know, I think it would help if you were more passionate.
Well, I took a tranquilizer this morning to calm myself down.
So I have two questions. One is there a differentiation between part-time and full-time workers? So that would be the first one in terms of vote, or is it one person, one vote, regardless of status, or one person, one card signed, I guess? That's the first piece. And then the second piece is if you put yourself in the shoes of a retailer and you were and this law, as you've outlined, gets approved and is kind of the way things are going forward, you know, how would you play your hand going forward? And, you know, specifically that first store gets organized or collection of stores gets organized. What sort of things do you think you would see management doing? Would they just be rolling over and just kind of,
no, I in my lifetime have been involved with a union of retailers. I will tell you from a retail standpoint, many years ago when I ran Handy Dan, my northern division was unionized. Our profits were less, our sales were less. It was very difficult to control the people because the culture was not there. Our southern stores in Southern California were great, and those stores were always very, very difficult to operate. They didn't work for us. They worked for the union. And you couldn't fire people. You couldn't lay people off. You couldn't have, we had work rules where people would work in one aisle and couldn't work in the next aisle. And your answer on part-time makes no difference. They're unionized also. It's part-time. It makes no difference. It's every single employee will be part-time, will be a union person. So what you end up doing is you retreat. Generally, you don't open as many stores. You have to let people go. I would say that in anticipation of this happening, you would let people go through attrition. There are stores that you probably would close because you know that they're marginal or making a profit. Then you would say, if I add on all the work rules and everything else, the difficulty of operating the business, I probably will have to close those stores. And third of all, either you pass the cost on to the customer. If you continue operating the business as you have in the past and you keep the same level of employment, and the customer will end up, you know, it's just like corporate taxes. You charge corporations more money, they just charge the customer. So the public will end up paying for this in the final analysis. From a business standpoint, it's very difficult to operate a business. At one point in my career, I was looking at a company in France. And we were thinking of doing something in France, and I had opportunities to meet with some of the people in France that operate businesses, and we couldn't operate a Home Depot. I mean, there's no way. That's why we never went to Europe. We never went to France or Germany or any of those companies. It would have a dramatic effect on how you operate your business. And from a business standpoint, you either pass it on to the customer, and by the way, you would never have the culture again. The culture just won't be there. We would not have, you know, we're having a tough time getting people now, you know, getting back the culture at Home Depot. If this ever happened, I'm not making this a statement for Frank Blake. This is only my own observation. That culture that we've finally brought back into the stores after 4 years in our deli would be gone. And we'd end up with what we had before. Every retail company, it's not only retail, I'm worried about the manufacturers that feed us, I'm worried about the service organizations that feed us, I'm worried about all the organizations. I think about what the cost impact is going to be across the board, and America is going to pay for it. Mr. and Mrs. Young, Joe the plumber, I mean, he's going to start paying for it. He's going to start paying more for his faucets and his plugs and his pipe and everything else that he does. And so my answer to you is that it's just going to be a bad news. But more worse than that is if I were a company wanting to come into the States, I wouldn't come here. What would be my incentive? It's the same way I would not invest. Listen, why are people investing money in Ireland today? As opposed to, there's more money invested in Ireland in the last month than it has been in the last 5 years in France. Okay, next question.
Actually, if you don't mind, I just want to jump in, Bernie. I don't know if you, looking at small versus big companies, like I had said earlier, if you know, companies like Walmart would, or some of the bigger companies would probably be able to litigate this for some time. Do you think that it would, something like this would affect smaller companies first, or would you think litigation like that would sort of delay sort of implementation?
I think there are guys out there who have guts and guys who don't have guts, okay? Unfortunately today, I don't think too much of a lot of CEOs that run their businesses, okay? So you have to take me off that thing. I think that most of them would cave in rather than fight. I think that most, and I said low-hanging fruit, and I meant low-hanging fruit. They're going to go after the low-hanging fruit first. They're going to go after the guys that they know can capitulate. They don't have a stomach for a fight and really don't even know how to fight anymore. They're so battered by Sarbanes-Oxley that they don't know if their company is going. You know, they'll call the lawyers in and say, what do I do? And the lawyers will say, don't make noise. You know, that kind of thing. So I think that they'll do the low-hanging fruit first, the easy ones first. I won't tell you what I think will be the low-hanging fruit because I already know. I got the list in my own mind.
Bernie? Am I on the line? One of the things that I would also add is that this does not necessarily need to be done top-down by an international union against a big company. Employees in a particular unit of a particular store can try and start their own union. It's very easy to do. All you need is a bright college student or a first-year law student that can download representation cards off the internet or get them from a local union if they get ginned up about this, they can organize a union themselves simply by getting the cards. If they get 50% of their fellow workers to sign cards, they can just take them to the local union and say, okay, here they are, now come in and represent us. And if you are a store that is part of a larger chain, the union will be very interested in this because they're then going to be able to get a contract, as Bernie said earlier, within a four-month period. They'll have a contract that does have higher benefits and wages than what the stores in the rest of the chain are offering, which is then going to be a great lever to get the rest of the people to start signing cards. So don't think that they'll only go after the Walmarts. This can come lots of different ways. And in fact, Starbucks is dealing with this right now, where some of their baristas in various stores are trying to organize, and the union finds that the company parachutes in and tries to get the employees to not go the full route.
But under this bill, they can't.
Well, they could still come in, but the point is that by the time they get there, the cards are signed.
Yeah, but isn't there, what about the provision of penalties for and a triple damages for employers that interfere with this unionizing?
Well, interference is absolutely correct. I mean, if you threaten, if you promise people we'll give you a raise, throw the union out, all of that is not allowed. But today, under the law, you can have a meeting with employees and you can say, listen, I know a lot of you signed cards, but we're going to have an election, and before you go in and vote, let me tell you some of the things that the union never told you about themselves, about underfunded pension plans, about your money going to politics, about strikes, about the fact that you can't get promoted on merit, and you're going to have to wait in line for seniority purposes, et cetera. And that is all legitimate because that's all the law, and that's reality. It's not a threat or a promise. The Starbucks problem, if I can call it that, is that a Starbucks store is relatively small. There are very few people on the payroll. And so getting half of them to sign cards is relatively easy, especially because some employees can tell other employees, look, you aren't going to work here for the rest of your life anyway. So the worst that can happen is that you sign the card. If things don't work out, you'll be gone in a year anyway. So just sign it and help us out. If those people sign a card literally overnight, you know, you just have a pizza party someplace and everybody or just half of the people sign these cards, by the time Starbucks corporate finds out about it, even if it's as soon as a day later, it's too late because once all those cards are signed, the union is in. You can't do anything about it at that point, so there's no time for the company to talk to the employees. And that, quite frankly, is going to be one change in the retail industry as well as these other service industries. Any company today that talks about unions in the orientation process is in a very small universe of companies. Most companies never want to mention it because it's just not a comfortable thing to bring up. What companies are going to have to start doing if they're going to cover their ass is in the orientation process, they're going to have to start talking to employees about the danger of signing cards and how signing cards before you get to hear why you shouldn't be signing a card is significant to the individual. And the company's going to have to start educating people about why they don't want third parties interfering in the relationship between the management and the employees. They're going to basically have to start the conversation with employees that they normally would have today after cards are signed, but before the election is held.
So, Rick, what you're really telling us is that there's nobody's going to be immune to this. I mean, it's
nobody.
It's going to be an avalanche. Before anybody gets off this phone, what is the only thing that's going to work? It's going to be money right now for these Senate races, these Republican Senate races. Norm Coleman in Minnesota. Give me the other ones, Rick, right now.
Well, in Oregon, you have Gordon Smith. In Minnesota, you have Norm Coleman. In Mississippi, you have Roger Wicker. In Kentucky, you have Mitch McConnell. And in North Carolina, you've got Elizabeth Dole. Those are the races that are still in play. And
you know, all of a sudden, Georgia's gotten into play. They put over $1 million into Georgia.
Yeah.
They're running ads around the clock now. Lying. I mean, don't even ask. I mean, Saxby Chambliss's got a fight on his hands now. So they're pumping money in. By the way, the unions are spending between $500 million to $1 billion on this election. The money, there is no problem with money. The Republicans are scrounging for money. These guys have this. The union. This is the biggest trifecta that's ever come down a pike. This is like betting on a loaded race. This is like going to a slot machine that you know is going to pay off 100%. And that's what's going on right now. So we need money. You can if they get a hold of Rick Berman, his offer unionfacts.com or the other one. What is it called?
EmployeeFreedom.org.
We could tell people how to, and they better open their wallets right now. If they don't open their wallets now, they're going to spend money that will come. I mean, this is going to hit them, and I know everybody's going to say the same thing. Business is bad, sales are down, it's going to be difficult. I don't have it in my budget. I will tell you that they don't have anything in their budget for this eventuality. That nobody has it in their budget. After talking to the retailers I've talked to, when they hear about this, they turn white. Okay? So, any other questions?
Your next question comes from Rob with AIG.
Yep. Yeah, Rob. Hello.
Rob, check to see if your phone is on mute, please.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. Sorry about that. A couple of questions. I heard Dana Corp come up before, and wondering how this potential law, card check law, compares with what we saw, the card check that we saw at Dana and Johnson Controls over the last 4 or 5 years. And if I remember right, management kind of agreed with that strategy. That's the first question, that union strategy. The second question is, what is the potential cost impact to these companies? And again, the reason I ask, thinking of the auto industry, to keep the unions out, many of these companies had raised their wages and benefits to union-like levels to take away the incentive to become unionized. The union, with new hires, the big three, right? They're getting 401ks instead of DB plans. Could you address some of those things? More on what the damage is here.
You know, Steve Handler could speak to that because he was with Chrysler. What were you saying, Steve?
Oh, the transplants, the foreign automakers here, their wages are close to the big three. They're not exactly the same as the big three. Their benefits are close. They're not quite as good.
Yeah.
But still, the Japanese and the Germans and the South Koreans, if they have to, they will match the big three salaries and benefits, maybe even go higher, because that's not what is really hurting the big three. Hurting the big three is the work rules and health care costs.
And pension.
So hourly rate they're willing to give up on. Vacations they can give up
so
on.
So your question is how much is it going to cost? I mean, I don't think anybody has a number. I mean, it's going to be enormous. It's just going to be enormous. Any business that's targeted, it is going to be enormous. Now, why do people like Kroger who are unionized, why are they concerned about something like this? They're concerned about the controls that the unions are going to have on local, state, and federal laws that are going to affect their business. NAFTA, bringing in product from Chile, you know, bringing in fruit from Chile where, you know, it's in California, putting up trade barriers. They're worried about global warming. If in fact, the unions are in, they're totally on global warming. You'll have the Kyoto effect here in the United States overnight. The Kyoto effect will pass in the United States. And we know that the Kyoto effect by itself is going to have an effect of 1 million to 1.5 million jobs in the United States. So, you know, it's not only what happens to your business, it's what's happened to the environment, the whole business environment. That's going to count, and the whole and what happens in the up in Disneyland, which is Washington. I mean, the laws that these guys are going to pass are going to be restrictive for business. The taxes that they're going to get and to pay for the medical care. I mean, I don't understand how McCain did not challenge that. I mean, they're going to spend $1 trillion over the next 4 or 5 years on medical care. Where the hell is that going to come from? I mean, it's got to come from taxes. It's got to come from something. You can't just, you have an empty checkbook right now with $700 billion going into saving the economy. Where the hell is that money going to come from? It's going to have to come from other things. That's going to affect all business. And then when you throw this union thing on top of it, my God.
So if I could, I want to just answer the piece about the Dana Corporation. one thing that we haven't talked about is that companies that are already unionized are pressured into so-called neutrality agreements. And that means that once you're unionized and you have a contract, oftentimes, and this is common in the UAW contracts, once you're unionized, you agree that if the company opens up another plant or takes ownership of another facility, that they will be neutral when it comes to the union wanting to organize the new facility. That is, that they won't say anything negative about the unions. And I've even seen neutrality clauses where the management agrees to tell the new employees that joining the union isn't such a bad deal and that there's good things about it. And they literally make the company support the union. And of course, at that point in time, once the unions sign the cards, the company has already agreed with the procedure that we're fighting over. Not only will they be neutral, but they will also accept the cards. And that, and the union just walks in. The Dana case was about a nuance in that, and that was basically where the union and the company had agreed without the employee involvement to participate in that kind of deal, that the employees could object to it. But that will not be the case if this law passes.
Okay. Next question.
Your next question comes from Darlene Boyle with Trust Company of the West.
Hi, good morning. My question or issue had to do with defined contribution and defined benefit plans. I think the previous caller had talked about that a little bit, basically where you would see that going. Also in terms of universal health care, does the U.S. company, if this passes and it's as bad as you think it's going to be, does the U.S. company become the de facto, basically, supporter of government programs? Is that the way we get to universal health care? Does the U.S. company then have to shoulder the defined benefit plans and this basically takes some stress off of the Social Security program?
Who knows? My answer to you is who knows? I mean, I don't know what they're going to ask for. I would assume if I were the unions and I saw this power coming, I would want to control every facet of everything. I mean, that's what I would want to do. And I think that the unions will ask for the world, and they're going to end up getting half the world. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Who knows what the cost is going to be? Listen, you're now talking about, this is like, it's akin to a football game, all right? You're losing in the second half, so you now pass a law that they can have no defensive backs, all right? I mean, that's what this is all about. That basically, there's no defense, there's no nothing. I'm going to do, as a union, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to ask for whatever I want to ask for. I know that I'm going to ask for more than I want. I'm going to end up with two-thirds of what I asked for, which is going to be 100% more than I got. Who knows on these questions? Because it all goes back to what the cost to America is going to be. I don't know what they're going to support at a federal level, and nobody can predict it right now. Trust me, they're in the boardrooms now. They have this all designed. They know what their roadmap is. They're licking their chops. Because they're watching what the pundits are saying the winner is. If Obama gets in and they win the Congress and they win the Senate and they can stop a filibuster, it's all over. And they already know what they're doing. They know where they're going. All the answers, the question that you're asking, they have an answer for. They're already strategized. They've been working on this for a year already. We have union lawyers that have told me how far they've passed this down. They have another rule. They have another law that's in the pipeline. I'll tell you about this law. I didn't want to tell you about it, but since you're asking questions, here's another law in the pipeline. If you have a strike, you can use your supervisors in your management group. There's a new law in the pipeline that says the management group will now become part of the union. In other words, at most companies, you have supervisors, you have district managers, you have all those people who are all immune before to unionization. You could hold them out by the NLRB rules, by the way. This is all part of what it was the major rule.
Well, this is called the Respect Act.
The Respect Act. Huh. They have a bill now. There's a bill now circulating to take that rule out, okay? You want to talk about chutzpah, boy. They got it. They're running with it, and they are taking no prisoners. There's no prisons. And guys like, I don't understand Warren Buffett. I don't understand some other these people. I don't get it. Steve and I have talked to Democratic guys who tell me, who have said to me, they've been to Washington. The members of the House and Senate have said it's the worst bill that ever come down a pike. They're holding their noses, but they know they're going to vote for it. They have to, because they know that they will not get reelected, because the union money will be against them if they don't vote for it. This is pure and simple blackmail, and they're going to do it. And everybody, up to now, they didn't care because they knew the president would veto it, and they knew that there was going to be an override on it in the Senate. Now, all of a sudden, they're naked. And Obama, hey, he loved this stuff. He wants to redistribute wealth anyway. This is a great way to do it.
Bernie, if I can add to your answer about those defined benefit plans versus defined contributions, right now, approximately 80% of all union-funded plans are underfunded. It pays for the unions now to try and get as many new people coming in to help support what is going to be a little bit of a disaster, not only at the public sector level, but at the private sector level. And so I imagine that in contract negotiations, they will try to get as much as they can in terms of defined benefit plans. They want to get as much money in there as possible, but as Bernie said, it's all subject to contract negotiations. In the long run, unions would like to get as many people organized into a federal plan for purposes of health care. Obviously, Social Security is terribly underfunded. What the unions would really like long term is to get health care off the table, and that way they don't have management sitting across from them every 3 years on contract negotiations saying, I'm sorry, I can't give you another raise because we're paying more for health care than we were paying 3 years ago. And then the rank and file get upset because they're not seeing enough more money in their paychecks. The other thing I would tell you is that, as Steve was talking about earlier, these guys don't have to pay quite as much money in some of these southern plants as they pay in Detroit. One of the reasons is that the union employees don't have to pay union dues. And so it's very easy for the company to tell them, look, there's an offset here. You're not paying union dues. You don't have to pay initiation fees. You don't have to pay for other sorts of one-shot deals that the union may require of people. And, of course, they point out to them that there are no strikes in a non-union plant, so you're never going to be out any money. You know, a two-week strike is going to cost you much more money than you'll ever make up with a bigger raise out of Detroit. So you can have a differential that favors management in some of these non-union plants and still have it make sense to the employees.
Any other questions?
We have a question from Janet with Third Coast Capital.
Thank you for hosting the call. I have two quick questions. Who basically is sponsoring this bill? And secondly, I've not seen anything of this in the media. And we know it's liberal-leaning, but it hasn't been covered anywhere. So thanks for answering.
Yeah, you're 100% right. It hasn't been seen in the media. It hasn't appeared anywhere. CNN, NBC. I was on Squawk Box 3 times already. I will tell you, CNBC gave me 2 hours on the Squawk Box, and I had more time on the Squawk Box trying to get CEOs to understand this. And so far, some of them have come out of their deep sleep. Most of them have not come out of their deep sleep. We've had companies where the council, the corporate council, have said, oh, this really is not going to affect us. You're not going to hear about this. Hopefully, calls like this will stir up the pot, and calls like this where I hope that you will call your people that you cover and say, what are you doing about this? You know, I'm going to bring up a point as a shareholder, if I knew the CEO of a company wasn't doing anything on something that was going to have a dramatic effect on my business, I'd sue the son of a bitch. I really would sue him.
There actually may be lawsuits after this is over.
Well, you know what? I'm going to join in the lawsuits. I'm so angry at some of these CEOs. I can't even believe the stupidity that's involved here. This is as important as anything that's ever happened to these companies. And they're not reacting, and they're not fighting. And it's, the old-time fighters are gone. But there are guys out there, by the way, I want you to know, that doesn't go across the board. There are people out there that are very quietly doing a lot of stuff, a lot of things, and they're all afraid. They're afraid of the unions. They're afraid of the trial lawyers. The truth is that there are ways to give money through C4s and C6s to educate the public to this. If the public knew about it, by the way, the statistics are that almost 80% of the public doesn't like this law. Very close to 80% doesn't like this law. They don't like the fact that you can't have a secret ballot. They don't like the fact that they're going to be unionized. You think that anybody in the southern states would vote if they knew about this and lose their job? Vote for this and lose your job.
To answer the question about someone not having read about this, you should read the lead editorial in today's Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal has done, I think, 3 editorials on this particular issue. The editorial today has a number of issues, but this card check issue is wrapped up in it. And even papers as liberal as the Washington Post have editorialized against this. Bernie is correct in saying that most people, when given the option of secret ballot or signing a card in public as your vote, would recoil and say, obviously, the secret ballot. The difficulty is that when businesses have talked about this, they do not talk about it in a way that gives an average person, an average voter, an interest at a personal consequence level. It becomes just an arcane voting issue, you know, whether I vote openly as in a caucus or I vote by a secret ballot. And while the consequences to the business community will be huge, individuals don't see it as a big deal until they're actually subject to it. And the business community has not, as Bernie has said. They have either run from this or they haven't been informed about it. And the unions, as opposed to years ago when they tried to do this, the unions made a very big deal about this and there was a major fight. Today, the unions have been very quiet about it, and the business community doesn't tend to fight if there's nothing to fight against. And so without there being an offense put out front by the unions, because they know they don't need to try and pass it, they only need to get the right number of legislators in place. If there's no big offense by the unions, then there's no defense by the business community. And what the business community needed was an offense of its own, and they've been very slow to find their voice and come to the table.
Yeah, and what has happened is that their organizations that they belong to, all of the retail associations, et cetera, have not been able to deal with this because they have so many members and they just, I don't know. It's politics as usual, bureaucracy. I don't have a clue.
Death by committee.
It's death by committee. It's just incredible. Every single retailer, you're all retail analysts. If a retailer has not gotten involved with this, if he has not spent money on this election, if he has not sent money to Norm Coleman and all these other guys, should be shot. Should be thrown out of their goddamn jobs.
Well, and quite frankly, Bernie, sending money to Norm Coleman, I mean, you're restricted as how much money you can.
And do it through you. I don't look. You can give $10,000 to his committee. You can, but there through your organization, Rick, they can also give a lot of money. We've had people come up with $500,000 who understand this issue. The millions of dollars that the unions are putting in, for every dollar we put in, they are putting in $100,000. I mean, the money is not a problem. But if a company is not fighting this and is not standing up and it thinks that they're going to be able to negotiate later on after this election, because what I've heard them say is, oh, well, we have our people in Wall Street and we're going to go down and we'll have our lobbyists. And you know, we'll meet with these guys. Come on, give me a break here. Are you kidding? None of these people are going to pay. They're not going to change their vote based on lobbying. All you're going to do is spend $1 million for your lobbyists. You're going to get nothing for it. I'd rather see them spend $1 million now on these elections. They'll get a hell of a lot. They'll fire all these guys in Washington. They're worthless anyway.
Let me suggest this in terms of what we can do both now and after the election. Now there are several vehicles, but I'll talk about 2 vehicles. One for corporate dollars would be Rick Berman's organization, unionfacts.org, because even though McCain-Feingold applies now that we're in the window period, there are still activities, the internet and other things that can be used to get out the vote. Also, and that would be large contributions. As Bernie mentioned, some organizations have written checks for $250,000, $500,000, some $2 million for this. Also, in the short term, someone like Norm Coleman or Gordon Smith, they could use an infusion to their committees, not to the Senate committee, to the PACs, of $10,000 by 30 or 40 individuals. That will buy more media. Also, individual contributions.
And by the way, we don't care whether, listen, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, it makes no difference. If you're a Democrat and you run a business, you better figure out a way to protect yourself. This is not a political issue. This is no prisoners, whether you're Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, or a communist. If you're running a business, you're going to be in deep caca here unless you do something about it.
Right. So if you're a communist, you probably would be happy with this.
Well, that's why it's being pushed. I don't want to get into the demagoguery of this, but I think that a CEO that doesn't react on this is derelict in his duty. I honestly believe they're derelict in his duty, and they deserve. And I hope that there are going to be lawsuits because they deserve to have them. Okay. Next question.
There are no further questions.
Bernie, thank you so much for this. I've gotten a lot of emails throughout this call and people thanking me profusely for doing this call and for listening, and a couple of people not sure which side you're on the issue, but for the most part, you know, people really kind of seem to, a lot of people for the first time actually hearing about this and understanding it.
We would like to have an email, if we could, from everybody that's on this call so we can send you some of the information that we have. We have some information we'd like to send out to you. So if we can get an email, who should they send it?
Probably to Jack in your office, I would think. Maybe both of us, to Steve Hantler and also to Jack. Why don't you give Jack's email address, Rick?
That would be Hubbard, H-U-B-B-A-R-D, at Berman, BERMANCO.com, BermanCO.com.
Or, you know, and Jack can just forward them to me.
And we'll send a lot of information. We'll send you some of these opinion things. We'll send you the letter that George Miller, along with other people,
Spartan Prince.
Huh?